What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of I Live in Cleveland. That's me, I'm Clevy, and this is a show where we talk about something I've read or heard or watched, and I try to find a deeper meaning or lesson. It's just stuff that's been going on in my head, you know? Thank you for visiting, and I hope you dig this weird little show of mine. So, every once in a while, I find myself intrigued by mindsets. What causes people to think and act in the way that they do? And while that isn't always the easiest thing to comprehend, it still proves to be a fascinating subject for me. And nothing scratches that itch more than a good crime documentary. It's weird that true crime has become like this explosive topic of content over the last couple of years. Anyway, while I was scrolling through my HBO Go subscription, I found a documentary that I felt compelled to give 2 hours and 20 minutes of my life. I Love You, Now Die is directed by Aaron Lee Carr, and it gives us insight into the lives of Conrad Roy and his girlfriend Michelle Carter, a couple of young teenagers who fell in love over text messages, but the story takes a dramatic turn when, spoiler alert, young Conrad takes his life. And then it gets really upsetting when you find out it's because it seems like he was manipulated into doing it by his girlfriend. So, I'd heard about this story a year or two ago, and I can remember how that made me feel. I was appalled by the thought of how someone could bully or manipulate another human into doing something so horrible like suicide. So when I saw the documentary, I decided to press play. And a lot of those emotions carried over. I mean, here we have a story of a young kid who seems like he's got life all figured out, and he's on the track for this healthy experiment into adulthood. He's got dreams and accolades, but then you find out he's also got a long-standing battle with depression and suicidal tendencies. He's convinced that there's no light to be found in his life, and so death is the only way out. And he absolutely tries to put this theory to the test when he overdoses on Tylenol. If not for the quick response of medical experts pumping the drugs from his system, the story would be over. Loneliness is the victor once again, and its claws dig deep. And I felt for this kid in despair, you know. It's funny, I used to look at people with depression and say, you gotta get over it. You can do it. You just gotta get on with your life. Yeah, I know how naive that sounds. But when depression came knocking at my door, I saw what kind of monster we're really dealing with here. It's this looming presence, pitch black and faceless, like some kind of Lovecraftian god made of quicksand. The harder you struggle, the deeper you sink. And to quote Sartre, if you're lonely when you're alone, you're in bad company. All of a sudden, this ray of sunlight peeks through an overcast sky. This girl, Michelle Carter, comes into the picture, and you can see glimpses of happiness through the words of children that are like all of us. We're just trying to figure out our place in this infinite fractal we call the universe. They share with each other these moments of extreme vulnerability, including the fact that Conrad is suicidal and he wants to take his life. So, one night in July, we see that the couple share a text thread where Michelle is eager for Conrad to carry out his plan. And these are some of the texts. You can't think about it. You just have to do it. You said you were going to do it, and I, like, don't get why you aren't. You're just making it harder on yourself by pushing it off. You just have to do it. And Conrad pulls into the parking lot of a Kmart with a small generator and closed windows and dies from carbon monoxide poisoning. Conrad's parents file a missing persons report. He's found and his death is ruled a suicide, until they find his cell phone with this open text thread, and thus begins the real story of the documentary. Was this a suicide or a homicide? Can you commit murder through text message? If I told you to go lay down on a railroad track, if you did it and were run over by a train, is it my fault or is it the fault of the one who voluntarily followed my instruction? I mean, what do you think? Are you furious? Are you saying that she should get whatever's coming to her? I don't necessarily disagree, but whether she does or not isn't the point that I, Clevy, am trying to delve into today. You see, the interesting thing about this documentary is that it was filmed in two parts. Ingeniously, what the director's done here is to put forth her information in front of the viewers like a court case. Part one being the prosecution, part two being the defense, and we, the spectators, become the jury. Now, we are, of course, not the voice of justice that will eventually rain down a verdict on Ms. Carter in a court of criminal law. However, we are the jury responsible for condemning or exonerating this young woman in the court of public opinion. I press play on the next and final episode, filled with rage, much like I had when I first started the series. Again, how could someone do something so heinous? How could you blatantly sidestep an opportunity to help someone in need? But we begin to see a different story play out. It's a story of sadness, a story of loneliness, a story between two young people that didn't understand how to cope with those feelings of despair, so much so that they created a narrative that they believed would actually fix the problems they both faced. Conrad wanting to die, and Michelle's need to be seen and accepted. The idea of this somewhat backwards, unconscious agreement that shows Michelle to be a support system in helping the person that she loved achieve his ultimate goal, in which he said himself, "No one can save me." And in return, Conrad's death would be the reason that she wouldn't be invisible anymore, taken in by friends and family after she had gone through such a horrifying ordeal. And the story goes on. Now look, I'm not here to comment on whether what she did was right or wrong. You watch the documentary and you form your own opinion. But I will be honest and say that after I heard both sides of the story, I wasn't filled with the same vitriol as before. I noticed this, and I asked myself, how often do I have my mind made up about something before I hear both sides of the story? How many times do we get reactionary to a juicy headline before we even read the article? It reminded me of a Buddhist koan about the blind men and the elephant. And I wanted to share it with you, but instead of reading the original text, I found a more rhymy, poetic version by John Godfrey Sachs. It reads, "'Twas six men of Indistan, to learning much inclined, who went to see the elephant, though all of them were blind, that each by observation might satisfy his mind. The first approached the elephant, and happening to fall against his broad and sturdy side, at once began to bawl, "God bless me, but the elephant is very like a wall." The second, feeling the tusk, cried, "Oh, what have we here? So very round and smooth and sharp, to me is mighty clear. This wonder of an elephant is very like a spear." The third approached the animal, and happening to take the squirming trunk within his hand, thus boldly up and spake, "I see," quoth he, "the elephant is very like a snake." The fourth reached out an eager hand, and felt about the knee. "What most this wondrous beast is like is mighty plain," quoth he, "'tis clear enough the elephant is very like a tree." The fifth, who chanced to touch the ear, said, "I am the blindest man, can tell what this resembles most. Deny the fact who can. This marvel of an elephant is very like a fan." The sixth no sooner had begun about the beast to grope, than seizing on the swinging tail that fell within his scope, "I see," quoth he, "the elephant is very like a rope." And so these men of Indistan disputed loud and long, each in his own opinion, exceeding stiff and strong, though each was partly in the right, and all were in the wrong. You see, the lesson here is that in life, to find the truth, we have to be willing to do the legwork. If we base our opinions only on our first impressions, then we're apt to be more wrong than right. We should each try to be like the seventh blind man, who walks all the way around the elephant in order to get the clearest picture in our mind's eye. And then we may attempt to speak on the figurative elephant in the room. But we can't ignore the facts and just react with a tribe, because people are three-dimensional. We're flawed. We're messy and complex. Like ducks, cool, calm, and collected on the surface, but kicking for dear life beneath the water, praying that we don't get pulled under. It's always okay to have your opinion, but I think I'll try to be more conscious of all the angles before I scream it from the mountaintops. But what do you guys think? Do you agree with me? Do you disagree? Did you watch the documentary? Do you want to watch it now? Let me know here or in the comments. You can email me at CleveTheBlackGuy, or you can find me on Facebook or Instagram at the same Cleve the Black Guy. That's CleveTheBlack, no K, guy. It has been my pleasure to serve you. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Thank you for visiting. Y'all come back now, you hear?